Welcome to Marketing for the Sales Guy, a podcast that aims to share marketing ideas that salespeople can use, but also hopefully will be relevant to B2B marketers that want to see sales results from their marketing efforts. Okay, hello everybody. On the show today, we have Phil Johnson, founder of the Master of Business Leadership Program. Welcome, Phil. And thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Jeremy. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
No, it's great to have you, Phil, on the podcast today, because the subject I want to talk about is emotional intelligence. And that is something Phil is very qualified to talk about. It's an interesting topic because I think everybody thinks they know what it means. Everybody thinks they have it or practice it. And maybe that's not really the case. But this is something we can dig into with Phil in a second. First, though, I've not done justice to Phil in the intro. Unlike my own short, unimpressive resume, Phil's is much richer. But rather than go through a full resume, Phil, would you mind sharing a few highlights of your background and how you come to focus on emotional intelligence?
Sure. I've been an executive coach for the last 21 years, helping individuals and organizations develop their emotional intelligence all over the world with a program I've created called the Master of Business Leadership Program. And there are MBL alumni in the United States and Canada, UK, Europe, Japan, Germany, Bosnia, Africa, Australia, the Middle East, and Saudi Arabia. So it's quite a spectrum of countries that the program exists in. Prior to that, I was an executive in the semiconductor industry for 20 years, and I actually got on this path about 54 years ago. I'm 68, and I was born with dyslexia. So that, as I've come to realize, helped me to do a lot of what I call emotional labor, because the dyslexia forced me out of my comfort zone from an early age. And it gave me insights into myself and others that are very valuable in the work I do today.
Oh, that's great, Phil. That's a really interesting intro, because we've started talking there about obviously emotional intelligence. But let's start with something very simple, primarily for me. When we're talking about emotional intelligence, what are we really talking about? What is emotional intelligence?
It's the ability to feel the fear and anxiety that change triggers in us and move through those emotions towards what it is we're trying to achieve. So the development of our emotional intelligence, one way of looking at that is it frees us from our fear. It frees us from the fear that controls us when we're challenged to do something new, when we're challenged by change to move outside of our comfort zone.
Right. So it's primarily then kind of fear of change in a way. So I mean, for a lot of people, we obviously confuse EQ and IQ. What is the big difference then between, I think you've hinted at it there really, but emotional intelligence and IQ?
Yeah, great question. Our intellectual intelligence is genetic. So if you have a high IQ, your parents had a high IQ, and their parents had a high IQ, and you inherited those genes. And whereas not everybody can have 160 IQ, anybody can develop their emotional intelligence. And I'll give you a kind of a relative comparison of the value of the two. Think of our ability to do intellectual labor as somebody giving us $10,000 a day for 31 days. So at the end of 31 days, you've got $310,000. And think of our ability to do emotional labor as a penny that doubles in value every day for 31 days. So day one, you've got a penny. Day two, you've got two pennies. Day 31, you've got $10.7 million. Day 40, you've got over $5 billion. Day 50, you've got over $5 trillion. So the ROI, the value of developing our emotional intelligence, far exceeds the value of our intellectual intelligence. As a matter of fact, there was a study, an extensive study at UC Berkeley over 40 years that compared intellectual intelligence and emotional intelligence. And the conclusion of that study was that emotional intelligence was 400% more valuable at predicting success than intellectual intelligence. And I actually think that number is low. I think the value of emotional intelligence is much greater than that. And I've actually been proving that all over the world for the last 21 years. I've helped individuals and organizations generate over $1.5 billion in revenue and progress in their careers. So the ROI for doing the work of developing our emotional intelligence is remarkable.
Okay, well, why then, Phil? Why is it more valuable? What are the real benefits of emotional intelligence?
You become more conscious of the choices you're making, of what's going on in you and around you. You also become more of an inspirational leader that people are attracted to. It helps to build trust, leading to higher levels of engagement and better results.
So how would you develop that? How can that be developed? I mean, I think a lot of people would think that you could have a basic understanding and they could develop that themselves, perhaps reading a few books, for example. How can it be developed? Can you develop it by reading some books?
No, you can't. And that's the difference between intellectual. That's the difference between knowing something intellectually and knowing something emotionally. Reading a book or having a conversation like this one or watching a video, those are intellectual processes. But the development of emotional intelligence is an experiential process. It's focused on what you do, not what you think.
Does that mean that anyone can develop their emotional intelligence?
Yes. Everyone can develop their emotional intelligence. And developing your emotional intelligence will guarantee your career, personal, and corporate success. Guaranteed. As a matter of fact, I can give you an example today of a company that's currently doing over $1 trillion a year in revenue. And their primary hiring focus is on emotional intelligence.
Right, okay. So the concept here is that anyone can develop this, but they would need the right experiences and the right guidance along the way. So how would they get that? Who's qualified to give them that kind of guidance? Or how do they get the experience?
Well, that's what I've been doing for the last 21 years. And that's why I created the Master of Business Leadership program, which is a 16-week program that gives them the skills and the habits in order to develop their emotional intelligence. But having said that, there are organizations that I've been working with for over 13 years, going on 14 years, because the ROI keeps getting greater and greater as you do the work required to develop and enhance your emotional intelligence. So the value keeps increasing.
Okay, you mentioned that you have a 16-week program, and you mentioned habits in there as well. So, I mean, imagine this is something that has to take place over a period of time, and I'm sure it doesn't stop after 16, weeks. Developing these habits and the rest and having the relevant experiences, this would all take time, presumably. This is an ongoing process. Is that right?
Yeah, essentially, I've condensed 54 years worth of research and experience into 16 weeks. So anybody can develop their emotional intelligence on their own. The MBL program simply is a proven process that accelerates those results.
Right. Well, you mentioned it's kind of appropriate for anyone, but given a lot of our listeners are in the marketing field, I just wondered, specifically thinking about marketers, how it might be important to people in marketing and how they use it in their role, you know, from day to day in terms of communicating with customers or prospects, but also maybe more personally in their career. So how would they maybe use this to help their business that they're in, and how would they maybe help it in terms of their own career?
Yeah, both answers are the same. Both questions have the same answer, and that's that developing your emotional intelligence enables you to demonstrate greater levels of trustability, which leads to higher levels of engagement. That engagement can be with customers or coworkers or family members or anybody. And that trustability and the network of trusted advisors you work with, that's your greatest asset. So because of the accelerating rate of global change, people are relying more and more on those around them that they trust to make decisions. As a matter of fact, there's something called a trust economy that's growing much faster than the traditional economy. And it's currently estimated at over $10 trillion a year. So trustability is a direct result of the development of your emotional intelligence.
Okay, digging into that a little bit without wanting you to give away too many secrets of your program, how would developing your emotional intelligence, how would that feed into trust? What is the connection there? Can you give us an example or maybe dig into that a little deeper?
Yeah, as we develop our emotional intelligence, we tend to become less resistive, less judgmental, and less attached to outcome. We tend to inspire people to lower their walls around us, our actions, our behavior. And that leads to higher levels of engagement. Let me give you an example of that $1 trillion a year company. That company is Apple. Apple's primary hiring focus is on the search for people with above average levels of emotional intelligence. That's why when you walk into an Apple store, that energy you feel is an example of a more emotionally intelligent environment. They're not trying to sell you anything. They want to try and understand your pain and, if possible, offer a solution. Whether you buy anything or not is secondary to their desire to want to serve you. They want you to have a great experience, and maybe you'll tell your friends and they'll tell their friends. And if you think about that, if you've ever been in an Apple store, and I'm sure that all of your listeners have, that energy you feel is an example of a more emotionally intelligent environment where you feel more relaxed. And that energy is a very different energy from the stores surrounding it. So because of the accelerating rate of global change, the need for the development of our emotional intelligence really represents the future of organizational development.
Right. Something you mentioned there about Apple looking for people that have got kind of higher measures of emotional intelligence. How would you measure emotional intelligence? How would a company measure that in terms of individuals?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I often I help them work through that. There's lots of ways. The real short answer to your question is the more emotionally intelligent you are, the easier it is to spot it in other people. Conversely, it's easy to spot the lack of it as well. So the more emotionally intelligent you are, the better you're able to see it in others.
Right. Okay. So that does kind of rely a little bit more on, you know, the individuals doing the recruiting rather than any kind of analytics. Then
there's all sorts of questions. Here's some questions I often give to HR professionals to include in their interview process.
Okay, this that's great.
Is why is this role of interest to you? How will this role help you to achieve what you want? What do you consider to be a few of your strengths? When was the last time you were embarrassed? What happened? How did you handle the situation? What activities excite you and energize you? What are some personal habits that have served you well? How good are you at accepting help from others? How good are you at asking for help? What makes you angry? What are some of your internal battles? What aspect of your work are you passionate about? Is your primary focus on present, past, or future events? So here are some examples that can give you some insights into an individual's current level of emotional intelligence.
No, that's great, Phil. And as you were reading those out, I was kind of trying to make notes of some of them because they seem like really good questions to ask. And some of them did jump out at me as, yeah, I could see how that one would be a kind of measure of EQ. But I imagine part of the answer to this is also, you know, what those answers would be and interpreting them the right way. So that's where presumably the person doing the interviews would have to interpret the answers correctly as well, would they not?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Well, thanks. I wasn't expecting that, so that's great. Thanks. That was a bit of a bonus there, Phil, for for having some questions to kind of share with us. Just to change tack slightly, we were talking about marketing professionals, and a lot of our listeners are based in Asia Pacific. And I just wondered whether there'd been any differences between regions that you'd kind of picked up on, and specifically in maybe Asia Pacific and other areas in terms of awareness or interest or in the development of emotional intelligence?
I can tell you from having worked in countries all over the world, it doesn't matter where you live, and it doesn't matter what you do for a living. The development of your emotional intelligence guarantees career, personal, and organizational results. There are various levels of, in some organizations, in some countries, trust or lack of trust or lack of engagement are major stumbling blocks to better results. As a matter of fact, the current level of employee engagement worldwide, according to Gallup, is around 13%. And I can tell you that low levels of employee engagement are costing the U.S. economy over $1 trillion a year. So the development of our emotional intelligence builds trust, and that leads to higher levels of engagement. So that alone is a great reason to be working on your emotional intelligence.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It sounds like everybody should be working on their emotional intelligence. But I imagine it's not quite that simple. You know, what would be the main barriers that would hinder development, or what are the big challenges with somebody taking this on?
Another great question, Jeremy. There are three primary sources of resistance we have to change. Two are biological and one is sociological, and I'll just explain briefly what they are. There's a part of our old, so first of all, we're only conscious about 3 to 5% of the time. The rest of the time, we're relying on our unconscious habits to determine our behavior and our results. So if we want better results than we're currently getting, we have to develop better habits. And that requires us to move outside of our comfort zone. And that creates, that triggers the two, triggers all three sources of resistance to change. So the first one is we have this part of our old lizard brain called the amygdala that's been around for about 500 million years that's been trying to keep us safe by making sure we never leave our comfort zone, we never leave our cave. So if we do, it secretes a hormone into our bloodstream called cortisol, and that causes the executive center of our brain, our prefrontal cortex, to shut off, and we go into what psychologists refer to as an amygdala hijack. We go into fight, flight, or freeze mode. We often say and do things we later regret, that we're when we're in the midst of one of those hijacks, we're out of control. When that happens in conflict situations, often people get injured, and in some cases die. When it happens in business or personal situations, relationships die. We burn trust. So as an analogy, if you think of your amygdala as a very frightened four-year-old child, the development of our emotional intelligence acts like a big brother or a big sister to quiet the amygdala response down and better enable us to feel the fear and anxiety that change and innovation always triggers in us and move through it towards what it is we're trying to achieve, as opposed to allowing that anxiety to keep us trapped in our comfort zone. So that's one source of biological resistance we have to change. A second is our existing habits. Once we develop a habit is really a neural network pathway in our brain that we've created through our actions. And once we develop a habit, it's there forever. And although we can develop new habits, better habits at any age, it's called brain plasticity or neurogenesis, those new habits are going to be weaker than our old habits, because the older habits that we developed earlier in life have a thicker insulation layer around them. It's called myelin. And so there's going to be an ongoing internal battle between the old habits and the new habits for dominance, even though the new habits create better results than the old habits. The third source of resistance we have to change is sociological, meaning that the people around us don't want us to change. Because if we start to change and get better results, maybe they're going to have to change, and that scares the heck out of them. And the best way to ensure they don't have to change is to make sure we fail, so they can say, look, I told you so, now get back in here to the herd with the rest of us. So although the development of emotional intelligence always produces better results that are quantifiable, measurable, there is significant both biological and sociological resistance that we have to change. And really, without guidance, without a system, without a coach to kind of help you through the process, it's highly unlikely that you're going to be willing to do the work that is required to achieve better results. And that's why there's such a low level of employee engagement worldwide, because most people, rather than trying to develop themselves, rather than betting on themselves and developing their emotional intelligence, they try to use position-based power to control and manipulate others to get them to change. And that, quite frankly, just doesn't work.
Right. The next key thing then would be, how would people find those coaches? Now, obviously, you are one, that for sure. But what should people be looking for in a coach if they wanted somebody to guide them along this particular path?
I would look at results. What kind of results does the coach's clients produce? You know, and you can look at videos or client videos or testimonials. You can talk with clients. But it's really important that if you're looking for a coach to help you on this journey, that coach is able to demonstrate the success of their coaching, the success of their process in helping individuals achieve their desired results. Because change requires a lot of work, and you want to make sure that you're working in a process that will get you the results you want. You don't want to be investing your time and money in something that just won't get you to where you want to be. So it's very important that whoever you choose is able to demonstrate their ability to get you what you want.
Okay, no, that makes a lot of sense. Actually, on that topic then, on the topic of results, what are, you know, who are the companies that have actually achieved great results by kind of following this path and focusing on emotional intelligence? Do you have any examples of companies that have done this successfully?
Well, how about Apple? Apple, Google, Southwest Airlines, JetBlue, Infosys, Whole Foods, FedEx, Costco, and others. More and more organizations are recognizing the need for emotional intelligence, so it's become part of their hiring, development, and promotional process. It's the future of organizational development.
Okay. So do they all do it the same way? Is there a similar path? I mean, in terms of the coaching that they go through, whether it's through you or someone else, does everybody coach the same way? Is the same, the pathway the same?
Well, I can't speak for everybody, but I can tell you that if their coaching process is successful, if it develops emotional intelligence, they're doing similar things that I'm doing in the MBL program. There's kind of like one path that needs to be followed in order to generate these kinds of results. So here's what I've been proving all over the world for the last 21 years. The reason that the development of our emotional intelligence guarantees, and I want to underline, guarantees career, personal, and corporate success is because it has to do with energy physics. So when we're born, see, we're only conscious about 3 to 5% of the time. But when we're born, we're not born with a conscious mind. Our consciousness doesn't start until we're about a year or so old. But we are born with an unconscious mind, and we immediately start wiring up our brain to create the habits that enable us to survive, to fit in, to get food, that kind of stuff. And a lot of those habits are what I call victim habits that cause us to unconsciously give away our energy. And when we're giving away our, and we do it in a myriad of ways, how we communicate, listen, take responsibility, make decisions, all sorts of ways. But when we're giving away our energy, it creates an energy deficit in us. So at the same time we're giving away our energy unconsciously, we're also unconsciously trying to steal energy from other people to make up for the energy we're giving away. And that dynamic is going on inside of everybody, everywhere, all over the world, all the time. And what I've just described very simply is the root cause of all drama, chaos, and conflict, war. And so what I do in the Master of Business Leadership program is I show people how they're unconsciously giving away their energy. And I give them better habits to practice to stop doing that. And when they stop giving away their energy, their need to steal the energy of other people goes away because they don't need it. And it's in that process that you develop your emotional intelligence. You become more conscious of what's going on in you and around you. You become more of an inspirational leader. And that leads to remarkable results. So what I just described to you very briefly is the MBL program. And so the MBL program is a root cause solution to everything that has a positive impact on your career, on your personal life, and on your corporate results. And I've been demonstrating this all over the world for the last 21 years. So although the process is very challenging for the reasons I've given, the results are phenomenal for those individuals and organizations willing to do the work required.
Okay, so if somebody was thinking of kind of embarking on this, and you mentioned the significant challenges, the hurdles, and they would need some guidance along the way, what would be the next step that you would recommend for somebody to do?
Well, the first step is they need to develop an emotional connection with a desired result that they want to achieve that's going to be stronger than the fear that's going to be generated in them when they start moving in that direction. So that's what I refer to as the fuel or the motivation for the journey. So you need a strong emotional connection to what it is you're trying to achieve in order to be willing to do the work that that achieving that success requires. And then they can contact me. I'd be happy to talk with them.
No, absolutely. I love the way you put that, fuel for the journey. I like that.
Yeah, there's only two sources of motivation that will cause somebody to leave their comfort zone in the pursuit of better results. One is pain. The other one is passion. So for most people, their initial motivation to want better results is pain. They have an urgent desire to get better results than they're currently getting. And that creates the motivation to take the leap of faith that change requires.
Right, absolutely. No, that makes sense. Phil, this is a topic that certainly I could talk to you for much longer on, and would possibly like to return to this topic as well. But I really wanted to thank you for being on the podcast today and sharing your thoughts on this. Really appreciate that. If anyone does want to reach out to you, what is the best way to connect with you, Phil?
I will give you a link to my Zoom calendar, and anybody that would like to contact me can just jump on my calendar, and I'd be happy to meet with them.
That's great. That would be perfect. Oh, that's brilliant, Phil. Thank you very much. Once again, thank you very much for being on the podcast and sharing this topic with us. It's been really very, very interesting, Phil. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate the opportunity. And I also want to thank you for the work you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Phil. Great to have you on. So thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, do share. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you want to access other podcasts and related articles, you can visit us at omjmedia.com. That's omjmedia.com. Until next time, bye-bye.